One of my favourite guests on The King Review since launching the show earlier this year is absolutely renowned demographer, speaker, columnist, Bernard Salt. It's a great pleasure. He's a very, very busy man, as you can imagine. So it's a great pleasure to have him on the line from a recently freed Melbourne. I particularly wanted to talk to Bernard about his fantastic column in The Australian in the last couple of weeks. And it's all about life expectancy. Really, really interesting, as always, with Bernard's columns. Bernard Salt, welcome to The King Review.
Thanks very much, Gavin. Pleased to be here.
Now, let me just read the quick couple of sentences to give listeners who may not have read that column in The Weekend Oz. You say that life expectancy in Australia has continued to rise over the past decade. A girl born in this country can now expect to live to 85 and a boy to 81. And interestingly, you say that the mega trend, this new data confirms that we are not too far behind Japan, who have an average of 85, and well ahead of a place like Central African Republic, who have a very low life expectancy of 53. Bernard Salt, talk to us first of all, just an overview of some of the most recent data on life expectancy.
Well, Gavin, this data comes out every 3 or 4 years. It's not an annual data set. Every 3 or 4 years, and it's always exciting. I go straight to the life expectancy figures. And there's a couple of very interesting things here. You know, for 100 years, the life expectancy for women has always outpaced men by about 2 years or so. So it's 85 and 83, means that the average life expectancy in Australia is 84 at the moment, 1 year behind Japan. Mm-hmm. And very interestingly, if you go back 100 years, to say 1920, so post the Great War, post the Spanish flu, life expectancy at that time was around 62 or 63. So we have added 20 years to life expectancy on the Australian continent over 100 years. So every 5 years, we've added 1 year to life expectancy in Australia. So unfortunately, the extra 20 years of life that we've added over the last 100 years gets added to the old age stage of the life. So it'd be great if you could add those extra 20 years into the teenage and 20-something
exactly.
time in the life cycle. But it does prompt us to think differently about aging, about, you know, the working life, about retirement, and really what lies ahead, because we have the baby boomer generation. It's going to be with us for another 20 years, 20-plus years in large numbers.
And that's extraordinary, isn't it? We've added over 20 years in 100 years. Extraordinary. And as you write in the column there, it just means that we have more people who are working and spending in their 60s, 70s and beyond.
Very much so. And in fact, it's not just about, you know, how we manage retirement and funding that, you know, with the health and pensions and so forth, although that's very important. I think it's a bigger issue than that. If life expectancy pushes out into the 80s, then from a very early age, I think the horizon of your thinking is extended. Mm. If you think, you know, at the age of 22 or 23, well, my life expectancy is probably going to be for another 60 years, you know, to mid-80s or something like that. You think, well, you know, I probably need to be saving for a house. I probably need to own a house. Preferably when I go into retirement, I probably need to be investing in superannuation. Whereas if you think, and this must have been the case prior to the Second World War, well, look, you know, life expectancy, you know, 60, early 60s or so, you have kids and then they leave home and then basically you're an old person. Mm. Who hasn't looked at photograph albums of their grandparents at the age of 50 or 60 and they look like old people. Mm. You looked old and acted old and felt old, I'm sure, by the age of 50, a century ago. Whereas today, 50, well, you've got another 30-plus years. Mm. 50 is nothing. You can develop another career,
in
fact,
right.
beyond the age of 50.
Mm. And it's almost that saying is certainly coming true that, you know, 65 is the new 55. It's almost like we skip forward a decade.
Mm. Well, I do. I think... I remember a very famous quote of John Lennon, the Beatle, who said in 1968, when he was 28, don't trust anyone over 30.
Yes.
John Lennon thought you were middle-aged
That's right.
and over
exactly.
it
exactly.
By 31. Mm. Whereas today, I think I would put a line in the sand at, say, the age of 40. I reckon at the age of 40, you have officially left youth behind and you've started towards middle age or in middle age. And very interestingly, the children of the baby boomers, the millennial generation, born between 1983 and 2001, will start to trip across the 40 line over the next year or two. So the millennials are going to have to navigate the beginnings of middle age within a year or two. Time catches up with all of us eventually, Gavin.
It does.
We're all heading in the same direction, I think.
It does indeed. It begs the question, though, doesn't it, Bernard Salt, that we've known about our ageing population for a very, very long time. It's been, as we said, increasing significantly over the past 100 years or so. And yet, in your view, are governments really grappling with this issue? Are they really planning and spending on infrastructure and services at levels that are needed to cope with people living into their 80s and 90s?
Well, I do think that Australia is better prepared than many other countries. And I must say that the initiative of the superannuation guarantee, I think it was 92, 93, I think it was the Keating government that administration that brought that in. And so here we are almost 30 years later. And, you know, it's certainly amassed a significant pool of funds. And there is a component of the population that is better prepared now than they would otherwise have been. So I think the superannuation planning was good. I mean, I'm sure all of these things can be finessed and improved and made fairer and all of those sorts of things. But as a principle, you know, that's evidence of the government actually doing something. I do think that we will start to see more people working on. And this means instead of you qualify, I think, for the age pension at 65. So I think we're going to see more workers working on, you know, not forever, but, you know, 66, 67, maybe through to 70 even. Part of the reason is that the nature of work has changed. If you're a boilermaker, you're bending over welding from the age of 15. By the time you're 55, your back is gone. And, you know, those blue-collar works, you have to retire at 60, 65 or so. But with knowledge work, you know, if you're an accountant or a lawyer or a demographer or a radio
host, exactly.
Radio host, yes, you can, theoretically, you can keep working on as long as you are able and, you know, feel that you wish to or there's a demand for your services. So I think we will see people remaining in the workforce. And I wonder whether, in fact, you know, especially in this time of a skills shortage, we've had the borders closed for 2 years. So I think this is a tremendous opportunity for people in their mid-60s to say, you know what, I'm going to do another year or two just to help out before the place that I work with for can, you know, get new workers or whatever. I think we will see, you can actually see the labour force participation rate inching up for the over 65. So we will see more workers working on mostly in knowledge work type occupations, I would think. So that's a social change that that we're seeing. You know, of course, we need to be funding this, which is always a problem with age pensions and other support, health. Although I will say that I think that the acute health costs, whilst I'm sure they're rising at the moment, I think they're going to be problematic in the early 2030s as the oldest of the baby boomers start to push into their 80s. That's where, you know, the health costs really do rise exponentially. So we've got 10 years to really focus on that aspect, I think, of planning for ageing.
If people are working longer, probably some part-time work as well. I think COVID at least has shown that, you know, people do want a bit more of that work-life balance. So potentially if you're in your late 60s, there's an opportunity to, you know, you might do 20 hours a week, for example. But what else can you see people doing if they've got that, as we say, about 84 now is our life expectancy, that will no doubt continue to creep up. So you've got, you know, 15 years or more of leisure time, if you like. I mean, will people have the money to travel and to enjoy life? I mean, what other social changes can you see happening with that extra time that people may have towards the end of their life?
Well, I'm predicting very confidently now that we will soon see the end of the R word, People will not retire. Old people retired, baby boomers' parents retired, but this generation, I think, of people in their 60s will think, oh, no, it's I'm part working, part retired, part volunteering.
Yes.
I've heard someone said, oh, I've really got a portfolio lifestyle. But that's a good term.
I like
I might
that.
Nick that. I like that too. A bit of everything, bit of this, bit of that.
Mm.
And when you think of it, the transition between childhood and adulthood, baby boomers invented the concept of the teenage phase in the life cycle, which became popular in the 1950s. Well, at the end of working life, I think there should be another transition stage. Mm. And I think I'd call it the lifestyle stage of the life cycle. Mm. So baby boomers will never, they'll never go into retirement home, but they might go into a lifestyle community.
Mm.
So take the R out, take the R word.
It's
out
a dirty word these days.
Yeah. So, you know, you might say, look, my radio program is aimed at lifestylers. Older lifestylers is a better way than using the word retiree.
Mm.
So there's going to be a lot of social change. If more people are living longer, healthier, more meaningful lives, you know, they're traveling, they're working, they're connected into the community, they're making a contribution, then I think they'll want that recognised as a particular stage in the life cycle. I had actually written previously that I think a lot of people in retirement or lifestyle years will use that time for social causes, and they will develop a social conscience around climate change, and you know they want to leave a legacy. You know, some people write their family history or whatever. Other people say, you know what, I really want to save the wetlands, or I want to actually make a contribution to society that way. So you know, there's plenty of ways, volunteering, any sort of volunteering, whether it's with an environmental group or a, you know, activist group, or whether it's, you know, helping out at the local school or sports or whatever. Again, you know, if you look at census figures, Australians are very socially engaged. The most people most likely to volunteer across the Australian life cycle are people aged 64 to about 68. Now they come out of work and they, you know, they want to be active. They want to give back. They want to contribute. Feel needed. It's when you look at it behind the figures, I think it's the search for meaning. I think we all want that. And the worst thing is to be just ignored, just you know, rendered irrelevant. People want engagement, you know, not necessarily a pat on the back or whatever. I think that's nice. But, you know, the feeling of satisfaction that they're doing something that makes a difference. And that's the kind of social shift that I think will become much more popular in the 2020s as more and more of the baby boomers tumble into that late 60s stage in the life cycle.
Very, very interesting. Do you have one of your famous acronyms for removes the R word and focuses on lifestyle?
No, you need one. In fact, I do. Yes, there's been a number of examples. There is a very famous brand, takeaway chicken brand, that took the fried word out, flushed it down into just three letters, the middle one being F.
Yeah. So, you're allowed to mention brand names on our station.
I am, right, okay, KFC. But I think they've gone back.
They have.
About 20 years, though, they were just known as KFC.
Absolutely.
And I thought, oh, that's probably to hide the fried.
Yeah, absolutely.
So transition the R word out and the lifestyle word in. And look, you know, I think retirement probably worked, you know, in the 20th century, where people worked to the age of 65, they got a gold watch and then they retired. And I remember going to an office do when this guy, you know, 30 years ago retired. He was the guy in the mailroom. And I asked him what he was going to do. He said, oh, you know, I'm going to toddle around Australia with his wife and, you know, do the grey nomad thing. And I thought, you know, it's a nice term, just toddle around Australia. That was what he wanted to do. And I hope he had a long and healthy and happy retirement. But these days, you know, from 58 onwards, people don't quite know whether you're retired, whether you're scaling back, what your plans are. So there's no hard edge anymore. It's blurring.
The portfolio lifestyle, absolutely love that. That's I'd like to do that now, and I'm in my early 40s. So
probably a bit of everything. Look, you know, again, if you're the search for meaning. And if you've worked in one job for 40 years or something like that, then I think the idea of, you know, saying, oh, it's Thursday, that's my golf day. And on Monday and Tuesday, it's my volunteer day. And, you know, the other days I do a bit of consulting or whatever it is that you do. I think it's the idea of mixing it up. And a variety, of course, is the spice of life, and particularly later in life, I think.
And just to finish off, I know you have to run, but do you think that our experiences through COVID will almost amplify that need for that better work-life balance, that lifestyle push? Has it given people a search for meaning?
Very much so. In fact, people have been talking about the great resignation, you know, the idea that people are going to toss in their job or whatever. I don't necessarily believe that that's the case. I do believe in what we now call the great reset. 2 years sitting at home, contemplating life, where you are, what you want to do, seeing the time tick by, you think, you know what, now's the time. As soon as this COVID thing's over, I am going to toddle around Australia, or I'm going to do this, or I'm going to change work, or I am going to organise my life better. In fact, I suspect also that there's a lot of people in their 60s who feel mightily cheated by the pandemic. They feel that they've been done out of two of their remaining good years. And you never know how many remaining good years you've got. I mean, it's a phrase that people in their 60s use all the time. How many good years have I got left? Do I really want to spend them working? Or do I want to do something else with that time? I think we've had 2 years to contemplate the meaning of life and where we are. And I think that once all the borders come down, Queensland, hopefully. In the next 2 weeks or so, then I think we'll see a lot of movement and a lot of people just, you know, making different decisions. And look, if it delivers people better happiness and contentment, then I'm all for it.
Absolutely brilliant, as always. Demographer, columnist with The Australian, keynote speaker, among other things, Bernard Salt, great pleasure to have you on the King Review today.
Thanks, Gavin.